All right. It's come to order. Okay, the meeting of the Governance Committee is now in order, or in session. What's that? I know, okay, very good. Okay. Just what we need in order to take action here. All right. First thing is approval of the agenda, but before I ask you to approve it, I just want to amend the agenda slightly. What I'd like to do is take up action item B first, and then I will give you just a, I want to give you an update on what to look for at our next Governance Committee meeting, and then we would move into the approval of the revisions of the Board Code of Ethics. So with that revised agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda? All right, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Okay. You have also before you the minutes from September 11th. Is there a motion to approve those or any comments? All right, moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All right. Okay. Next item, action item, is the 2015 Board Office nominations. There is a motion, a proposed motion in your book. I would like to move that motion. Is there a second? This has to do with nomination of officers. Then we can have discussion after it's been in front of us. Okay. All right. So you have before you the proposal, proposed nomination of officers for the 2015 year. Any comments? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Second item has to do with upcoming meeting. I just wanted to mention briefly at our meeting in November, we've been working with the General Counsel, looking at the bylaws and procedures, and also looking at our new responsibilities as they relate to oversight and what have you. And there were two items that we're going to be working on to bring back for your consideration in November. The first has to do with keeping of minutes for our executive session. We've looked at the compact and looked at the past procedures, and we're going to be coming back with a recommendation with respect to that. And the second item has to do with the offices of treasurer and controller, which are listed as offices of the board in the compact. And so we're going to be coming back to you with some suggestions as to how we ought to be treating those offices. The current situation is that those authorities have been delegated to the CFO. We're going to come back and take a look at this situation to see if there's a need to make some changes in light of everything that's been going on and draw some lines of responsibility. But I just wanted to get that on your radar screen. Yes.
CFO is not an officer.
That is correct. That's correct. So we want to come back with some suggestions as to how we ought to proceed. So as I said, no need to discuss that now, but just wanted to get on your radar screen. Okay, next item is approval of revisions to the Board Code of Ethics. Before I turn to the General Counsel, let me just kind of put this in context. You know, the review of our code actually started several years ago, but most recently, earlier this year, we asked staff to take a look at our code and also to compare it with what's been done at MWA, primarily because the Department of Transportation, through the ethics officers and IG, had looked at the code there and made some recommendations, and in fact, those were adopted by MWA. And so we felt, with that precedent, that we wanted to make sure we were as closely aligned with that as possible. And in looking at whether or not we wanted to track MWA's code, we wanted to keep in mind that there were some differences between our board and that board. One has to do with the fact that we have elected officials and they do not, and second is that they do procurement and we do not. The committee dealt earlier with the fiduciary duties and confidentiality issues separately under the code due to some time-sensitive matters. We did reach agreement on the principles and adopted those principles as a full board later, which is reflected in the document that you have before you today. I should note that as I get into the discussion of the code, I'm going to propose a slight clarification in the language related to the confidentiality provision, because in coordination with lawyers for the various jurisdictions that we've been working with over the last several weeks, we've modified the definition of jurisdiction, and so that's going to require us to make a few stylistic edits throughout the document. As we go into this, I wanted to mention some overarching principles that were underlying the changes that we are discussing and hopefully approving today. First is, as I mentioned earlier, we are tracking the guidance provided by the Department of Transportation, the Secretary, the Ethics Officers, and the IG in the MOR code. We felt like if the federal guidance has been made pretty clear, that certainly was a good footprint for us to try to follow and at least get close to, at least as it applies to us. Also, we wanted to make sure we provided maximum transparency in the code process and in our whole ethical guidelines. We also wanted to allow for the presence of elected officials on the WMATA board, which is a distinguishing factor. Also, we wanted to adhere to the provisions and spirit of the compact that created WMATA. And finally, we want to recognize that increased attention is now being focused on the interaction between public policy and GIFs. Thus, we need to be as open and transparent as we adopt our provisions as they relate to GIFs and members of this board. Also, at this point, I wanted to thank the lawyers from the District, Maryland, Virginia, and NVTC for their input to the process, as reflected by their working with WMATA's general counsel so that board members would have access to those lawyers' views as we consider and adopt these code changes. So thank you to those who were involved in that process. At our previous meeting, we asked staff to draft language to incorporate many of the suggestions made by those lawyers that were reflected in the chart which we circulated to you earlier. Since then, there have been meetings among the lawyers, and the committee members have had the opportunity to review the suggestions in more detail with the benefit of that input. What I'd like to do is to go through the proposed changes page by page, seeking consensus on each one, and then entertain a motion at the end to adopt all the approved changes for recommendation to the full board for approval on October 23rd. Okay. Any questions about anything I've said so far to tee this up? Okay, moving to the actual document, on page 2, under duty of confidentiality, Loida, do you have the motions? What I'd like to propose is a motion consistent with what I said earlier, which basically recognizes the fact that we have changed the definition of jurisdiction, which is going to require that we make some editorial changes throughout the document. And my motion is to direct staff to make all revisions necessary for accurate and consistent use of the term jurisdiction throughout the proposed Code of Ethics without changing the meaning of any provision. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay.
And those changes will be made before it comes back.
They'll be made before. And you'll see it before we the board, full board takes it up on the 24th. Okay, moving along to page 4, and this relates to what we just moved on. This has to do with the definition of jurisdiction. And once again, this is one of the items that we discussed with the lawyers who in turn talked to their members, and so we wanted to propose changing the definition of jurisdiction, which was covered by the earlier memo motion. Next, moving to, yes.
Is the definition of jurisdiction the one that's in the redline version now, or is it a different one that you're moving?
It's the one that's in the document.
It's the one that's in the document with red lines, underlined. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Next change is on page 6, and this relates to, well, a couple of changes. The first one relates to apparent conflict of interest. And what I'm suggesting is that we change apparent conflict of interest to appearance of conflict. Any discussion on that? And then we would also then make those changes throughout the document. Yes. Madam
no,
General Counsel?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you wanted to. I thought you had raised your hand to say something. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, I think the change is a good one, appearance as opposed to apparent.
Yeah.
I also recall that some of the outside reviewers did not want that included in either fashion, either appearance or apparent. And I think it's very important that we do have the appearance of conflict reflected as one of our ethical requirements.
Okay.
Basically leaving it the way it is.
Looked at it in a particular set of circumstances, was it a true conflict, but where there is an appearance, I think we have to look at it.
And that goes back to what I said earlier about transparency and trying to be as open as we can.
We've also found that you can be charged with criminal behavior when you haven't even broken a written code if the appearance is strong enough.
I think we want
to be able to assure ourselves we don't get close to that mark.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So you're not suggesting anything that's different than what's written down?
I'm just strongly supporting what
You're supporting
down,
what's written. Thank you.
Actually, I think this does require a motion to change the language in Article 4B from an apparent conflict of interest to appearance.
The appearance.
We're changing the language. We're suggesting that the language, the term be changed, because appearance tracks the federal language and the statute case law. And so that way we are more consistent with the federal law and with the case law interpreting appearance of conflicts.
Okay. And let me also add that that particular item was another one of the items that came out of the discussion we've had recently with the various lawyers and as well as the members.
That's correct.
And that also, I'm sorry, do you have something else?
I was going to say, we do need a separate motion on that, though, please.
Okay. All right. With that in mind, let me make a motion that we make the change to appearance and that we direct staff to make the corrections throughout the document to reflect that. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Next, we have the language under, I guess, the new D. Which was language, once again, it came out of our discussion with the various lawyers, adding those lines, phrase related to conflicts and involving property within the jurisdiction of the board members. And once again, this is language that was from our discussion, so I'm assuming that the members are okay with that change. Okay? Consensus there, but I'm not going to take a motion on that. I'll just keep moving through. Also, under Article 5, you see that we've struck through legally required participation because I would suggest as a clarification, since that's no longer going to be appearing in here, we wanted to get that out of the document.
Right.
Did you want to comment any on that, Madam?
No.
You have no comment. Okay. Okay, moving over to page 7.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Isn't there a change at the bottom of page 6?
That was a change. Well, on my document, that was a legally required participation that we struck.
That's going to be picked up in a motion.
Okay, it's going to be picked up later.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. Good. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, page 7. The only comment there reverts to divesting in lieu of recusal. There was discussion about that, but what I'm recommending is that we keep this language in, and this goes back to what I said earlier, because we have elected officials serving on our board, we needed to have that situation, that had this provision in place so that if a person or member finds out subsequent to some donation that there is a conflict or a reason to divest, they have the ability to do that.
We give them a cure.
Yes, a way to cure the conflict. Any discussion on that?
We're talking about it, the appearance of a conflict of interest, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Although in this case,
this would actually be a
conflict. In other words, if you had a donation, and once again, you can jump in, if you received a donation from someone and then subsequent action created a conflict for you, you could, in essence, return that contribution to that individual. And as I said, this is primarily because we have elected officials.
Right. I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm looking at the language. Are you changing the language that says a board member with an apparent, or we would now say appearance, of a conflict of interest arising by an improper benefit may, with concurrence of the chair, da-da-da-da-da. So are you changing the language that's on the page now?
No, I'm not changing the language.
Right.
The reason it's noted was because there was a question raised and there was some discussion and the decision was to keep it in.
All right. That was what I need to know.
Okay. Page 8. There was a change. There was a proposed change relating to the, I guess, D, compact required participation.
Mr. Chair, you have a motion. dealing with this section.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and I think that's been circulated. That was the second motion. Oh, this doesn't, because we need to take a motion to delete that, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I wanted to just set it up that we had put this provision in, but then there's been subsequent discussion about it, and we've decided it would probably be the better move just to delete that provision. So I would like to make a motion that we delete D, compact required participation. And once again, this is reflective of some of the discussions we've had in the interim. So is there a second to that motion?
I would second it, and my understanding is that would also delete the language at the bottom of page 6 also. Is that correct? That refers to this section, which would then no longer exist.
Yes, yes.
Right. Okay. So we would strike the last sentence of Article 5, first paragraph, which reads, a board member with a conflict of interest may nevertheless participate in a matter when the participation is required by the compact. That would be stricken. And then strike Part D of Article 5, compact required participation, and renumber the subsequent parts accordingly.
Great.
So we still could find ourselves then in a situation where an action we wanted to take might be precluded or deferred because we couldn't find the right people to do it.
It would be hard to think of a situation because the only actual conflicts of those involving financial matters. And the board currently, the procurement responsibility rests with the general manager.
We don't run into that.
So we shouldn't have a situation like that.
Hopefully that'll be the case, but if it does occur,
if we get there, we'll have to deal with it.
But the overall, the issue there underlying all that for others in the audience had to do with the jurisdictional veto, in essence, because you have to have one member from each jurisdiction in order for the board to have a quorum and to take action.
If one member were in some way conflicted, we could have a problem.
Well, you could substitute someone else. I mean, I think the only way that this would become a major issue is if you had all four members from a jurisdiction who are conflicted on an issue that the board doesn't actually deal with anymore. So I think the chances of it being a problem are fairly nil.
So we could find at least one
member.
Although it might take rescheduling the action.
Yeah.
My sense is that the jurisdictions, and I think this is true now and would be true in a case like that, would make every effort to provide somebody who was not conflicted who could participate. I mean, obviously, if it's an emergency and, you know, the flu has hit Maryland and everybody's, you know, in bed, we'll roll someone in on a gurney that can vote.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Also at the bottom of page 8, you'll see that the highlighted language to divest or make was a clarification that was suggested in our discussion with the lawyers, so I'm assuming everyone's comfortable with us making that clarification. Okay, page 9. We added or WMATA employees under 7.2, and that also was a suggestion from the lawyers during the discussion, so I'm assuming everybody is in agreement with that. And following that, under B2, we're striking some language there, which I believe was something that the lawyers also proposed. So I'm assuming that people, okay, there's consensus on that. Finally, on number 4, under B, there was a suggestion that we return that surrendering of improper gifts be made to the ethics committee instead of to the ethics officer. And the feeling was, even though that was recommended, that we would stick with the proposal primarily because, one, you'd have to pull a whole ethics committee together to do that, and then, two, you would then also indirectly basically taint the other members of the committee or the board who had to come together as a committee. So we think this is the simplest, cleanest way of handling that issue.
So we're going to taint the ethics officer instead.
Yes. But she works for us, so that's okay to do. Okay, page 10. At the top of the page, we have a new clarification that we are proposing, which basically adds the word to the giver, which is, as I said, just a sort of a stylistic change, makes it a little more clear. We appreciate that. Also, we added the words are seeking under Article 9.1. Once again, this is a matter of clarification to make it clear what we were trying to say. So I'm assuming that, did something you want to say on that? Okay, we're good. Okay, page 11. Under B2, there was a recommendation that this be removed, but the committee is basically would like to see this stay in, because it does, what it basically does is have two definitions of your household, basically. And what it does is have a different standard with respect to those members of your household who are more further removed from the actual member. So I don't know if you wanted to speak to that or not, but just to...
Right. So this is a distinction that was strongly encouraged by the USDOT, and it does make a distinction between household members and relatives, relatives being those who are further removed from immediate household members. We think it's an important distinction to maintain and are recommending that it stay in consistent with the direction given by the Department of Transportation.
Okay, and I might also add that the next one right under that, where we have a two-year basically window as opposed to a one, is also consistent with what we thought was appropriate based on the other guidelines. So
that's correct.
Is there concurrence with those two changes?
Yes.
Okay. Moving along, page 12. as soon as I get back from my shopping trip in New York, I'll answer that. Okay, moving right along, page 12. Let's see. I'm trying to find out where we are here. This has to do, is this the question about adding governmental?
Yes.
Okay, there was a suggestion under, I guess this is 10.3, that we would add governmental to the list of organizations. And Phil, could you elaborate a little bit on what, how that came about and the fact that that might, in essence, if we added it, create another situation where there could be an appearance of conflict?
Right. The suggestion was to add among the types of organizations you might have membership in that you would not need to report on the annual disclosure and updates, governmental positions, as well as this list here of nonprofit, labor, et cetera. The difference is that governmental positions have some authority over public policy and decision making. And as a result, we think that it is more consistent with the goals of transparency to share those governmental positions in the disclosure statement. That does not mean that there is a conflict. That just means that those paying attention to board actions know who has what interests through their governmental affiliations.
Yeah, and it gets back to the principle I mentioned earlier about transparency and making it clear that we're being as open as possible. So, yes.
I'm fine with the idea. I think it might be further clarified if governmental were included in what should be reported. Right now, you're just not, you're not
right.
Exempting it, but we weren't, didn't make it clear that it should be among the things you report.
Right.
All right. Committee members okay with that suggestion?
So we would add that to Article 10A2.
Including nonprofit, labor, educational, governmental, or other institutions.
Right.
Well, excluding.
Right.
Religious, social, fraternal.
Okay. You okay
right.
with that?
Yes.
All right. Hearing no objection, we'll move down to, paragraph C. Oh, wait a minute. You're coming back as we need you.
Yes, I know. I'll be right there.
Oh, okay.
I just want to make sure I get.
Okay. Where we add the word A in front of household, that's just a new clarification to make it clear. So there's no legal ramification, just makes it a little clearer. Okay, moving on to page 13. under Article, I guess, Section E, having to do with acknowledgement of fiduciary duties and responsibilities, there was some discussion about whether or not that should stay in or stay out. Our recommendation is that we keep that in because that's consistent with the board's stated policy of making it clear that people recognize the fiduciary duties and responsibilities, and this is just part of the concept of going forward with that. With respect to Article 11, there were some questions raised about the last sentence under A and B, and this is consistent with what we mentioned earlier. This just is consistent with what the board has expressed as making it clear that this is what board members need to do in order to comply. So this is really, once again, under the theory of transparency and being as open as honest as we can. We want to keep that in. Okay, moving ahead to page 15. There were two items there under, first under D, under ethics officer investigations. We're proposing changing the language from appropriate prosecutor to WMATA inspector general. And this was a change that came out of the discussions with the various lawyers as well as members. So I'm assuming that everybody's comfortable with that. Also at the bottom of the page, and
the inspector general would have the ability to refer it to a prosecutor.
Right. Yes. That's a little clearer in what we say, and we appreciate that recommendation. At the bottom of the page and carrying over to page 16 is language that is addressed in the motion, which we've circulated to you. And you see the language in front of you, and this is reflective of discussions not only with the lawyers and the members, but between members of the committee earlier today. And this basically says that in a situation where a member of the ethics committee is not able to fulfill their responsibilities because of a conflict, in replacing that individual, the chair will consult with the members of the jurisdiction of the conflicted member as well as other members of the executive committee, ethics committee, before replacing that individual. And that language is, my understanding, is acceptable to everybody. So I will entertain a motion. I will make the motion. Is there a second?
I'm a member of the committee.
Is there a second? So
I can second it, but I think there's some discussion about that.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
What I wanted to just point out is I actually read the motion, but it strikes me that in addition to the last sentence in Article 13A, you also need to strike in the first sentence of 13A, everything after the executive committee will serve as the ethics committee, period. Otherwise, you have language that's inconsistent with what's being proposed to be added.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that the language in the motion would be inserted following the comma, the first comma of the first sentence. So it would read, the executive committee will serve as the ethics. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's just a period there, and then you're substituting.
That's right.
The new language at the end.
Putting a period after that and then substituting.
And then pick up with the board chair
will
serve as chair of the ethics committee. Okay. I'm okay with that.
Can I raise one more issue?
Yes.
We talked about this internally in Maryland. And the other thing that's I don't want to say missing here, but at least is under a cloud here, is not when a member of the ethics committee is conflicted, but when he just has a scheduling problem and can't attend the meeting. And that's not really addressed now in this paragraph. It strikes me, I think Kathy as well, that the procedure at that point should be that the person, as in any other situation, can designate a person from his jurisdiction to attend and participate in the meeting for him.
Well, there's nothing in this language that would preclude that. Right. The chair would check with the jurisdiction to find out who was going to replace that person at the meeting. So
right. The language contemplates that any time an ethics committee member is unavailable or unable to fulfill the duties, that there would be this process so that the committee could do its work.
No, I think that this was just when there was when a person was conflicted out, not when there was a scheduling problem. If that's my understanding, you wouldn't want to, if somebody is just can't make a meeting, you don't want to go through this. But it's the question, and I understand the concern of the chair, which I share, is that you not create an appearance of a problem by having a conflicted member, a person who has a conflict and must step aside from the ethics committee for that reason, select their replacement. But if the person is simply unable to participate in the meeting, there's no problem with their selecting their replacement. It's the conflicted member who you have an issue with. And that's why this process would go in for a conflicted member, but not when there's a normal type of thing. And as a matter of fact, my understanding, the language that we're proposing under the motion number B says an ethics committee member who is unable to fulfill his or her duties on the committee, conflicted member. And it refers specifically to somebody who has a conflict, not somebody who's schedulely unavailable.
Right. So why don't we clarify that, I think, in the language, so that it's clear that when an ethics committee member is unavailable due to a conflict, just so we're clear. And then you're right, we do have it defined as a conflicted member. But did you have a place you wanted to put that?
What I would suggest is that we change the Part B of the motion such that the new language read, an ethics committee member who is unable to fulfill his or her duties due to an actual conflict or appearance of a conflict, and then conflicted member. So it's clear that we're only talking about somebody who has an actual or appearance of a conflict, to pick up language elsewhere in the code.
Yeah, but I don't want to be picky here, but I think there is still a problem here, since the ethics committee is defined as the executive committee. And for someone as an alternative to then serve on the ethics committee in place of a member of the executive committee, I think we need a sentence that actually says that.
It doesn't.
Well, I can
certainly imply that.
The ethics committee member
may not designate his or her own replacement if they're conflicted. That implies to me they can if they're not conflicted.
But we're not using that language.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
A procedural question. Now, when the executive committee meets, if one of the executive committee members is not present, is there someone else from that jurisdiction replacing them, or is it just the three?
No.
They can't meet without the, if somebody's
they
missing.
They wait until the members are all available.
We wait until everybody can be on, either on a conference call or in a meeting.
Okay. Well, that seems to make the point that if you want the ethics committee to have a member, you need to have a sentence that says he can designate a replacement.
Yeah, because the next set, B, says four members constitute a quorum, and there must be one from each jurisdiction. So we'd have to have a basis to fill that.
But that right, so if you want to add language that restricts this to when the conflict exists, yeah. I would be comfortable with that, but I don't think we need anything further than that, because this would only apply when there was a conflict.
Right.
But then, based on what the chair said, then it leaves open what happens when there's a scheduling problem.
The executive committee doesn't meet.
Right,
but the ethics committee doesn't meet.
There aren't any alternates.
There aren't any alternates because
the idea is that the ethics committee, like the executive committee, would simply not meet if somebody could not make it.
Well, it could not meet under the definition in B that Mort just cited.
Yeah. Right.
You need four.
Well, they could not meet except this provision would kick in and say that they would appoint somebody to replace the conflicted member, so they would have a quorum.
For purposes of dealing with the conflict.
Yeah.
If there's a member who has a conflict, if there's a member who simply whose schedule, you set a meeting on X date and one member can't make it, one member of the ethics committee can't make it. Does that mean that the meeting is not held?
Yeah, in the board's interpretation.
Yeah, that sounds like the meeting simply isn't held.
Right.
Well, it couldn't meet and act anyway unless they had four people there. And so that's when this provision would kick in, is that they would appoint somebody else from that jurisdiction. Otherwise, they couldn't meet.
No, but that only applies where the person is conflicted. If the person is just sick and calls the chairman of the committee and says, hey, I can't make it today. I'm deathly ill with something bad. At that point, there is no meeting.
Not meet then, or do we need a process to replace?
Or if you didn't put in the word conflicted, you would pick up that situation because then the chair would then appoint somebody in that position. In other words, we left that phrase out.
But I think Given that we wanted to deal with this in a specific way for a member with a conflict due to the reasonable concern about the appearance of a conflict with a conflicted member you know, suggesting their own replacement. We therefore put in a process. If somebody calls up and says, I can't make it today, I'm sick, do you want to go through that process, or wouldn't it be easier to simply cancel the meeting?
Yeah, I would suggest this latter situation you're contemplating would really be best reserved for the procedures. I mean, if you want, if you want to clarify that the ethics committee will only meet when all members, you know, on a schedule that is accommodates all members' availability or something like that. If we did that in the procedures document instead of the ethics code, I think that gets to your issue. But what this is really is dealing with is the conflict situation.
If you didn't have the provision with respect to a conflicted member, then you could never have that meeting.
Yeah, that's correct. All right. Well, why don't we do that? Why don't we go ahead and accept the language that we've had here, and that we will deal
with
the situation you mentioned in the procedures.
Yeah, with the suggested change that was suggested by counsel.
Yeah.
An ethics committee member who is unable to fulfill his or her duties on the committee due to an actual conflict or the appearance of a conflict
of interest. Yes, we accept that language, yes.
Okay.
So we've got a motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next, we go to page 16. Let's see, where are we? Okay, we have a clarification here related to under C1. Basically, we're adding changing a word here. That's the only reason. This is basically just a clarification, correct?
That's right. Cured is not a term that's used elsewhere in the code. In other places, use resolved. So we're just making it clear.
Who would judge that it's resolved? The ethics officer?
It would have to be resolved through the. Let's see, I just want to quote the right provision. Resolving a conflict, an apparent conflict is under Article 5. That's the recusal, divesting, or declaration options. And that's all spelled out in those sections, how each of those are done.
Yeah, it's just
the language in the Article 5 actually says resolving a conflict. I think that's why the change was made.
Yeah, that's why we changed
it.
Okay. Moving to page 17, under Ethics Committee Recommendation, the second paragraph, we're moving to strike that paragraph. This is, once again, one of the issues that was addressed by the lawyers and the members, and we agreed with that recommendation, so that's being struck. And then under sanctions, the original language basically, well, the compact allows the board to take certain action with respect to members. What we're proposing here is a modification of that came out of the discussion, which basically said before the board takes the action that it is authorized to take under the compact, they will collaborate or consult with the jurisdiction of the member that is the subject of the discussion before they make a decision or recommendation as to a sanction. So that's a modification of what was put forth. So hopefully everybody is okay with that. Page 18, we have another clarification under 3, which basically is, I guess you added a comma there, I think is what you did.
Simple as that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, moving to page 19 under Appendix 1, basically the issue to be discussed there had to do with including travel and lodging within the free attendance. And the thought was we wanted to err on the side, once again going back to the principle I mentioned of trying to have as clear a line between public making a public policy and gifts and things of that nature, that we would basically follow the guidelines that the Department of Transportation had put out and suggest that we keep the language that's here. No, I'm shocked that anybody even think that. Page 20, it's the same issue there. Basically, the question is putting a limit of $25 on the value of something that's provided to a member. There was some discussion of just removing that limit, once again, in the spirit of trying to have a clear line in light of increased scrutiny of those items. We would stick with 25. And also, the last, under B, we talked about members are to turn the gifts over as soon as practical to the ethics officer for disposition. Once again, that is also consistent with the concept of just not creating any situation if we don't have to surrounding gifts. Any comment on that? Okay, now that concludes going through the document. With the various changes that we made, which council has captured, which will be reflected in a revised document, which will be provided to you well in advance of the full board meeting, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the revisions to the Code of Ethics as agreed upon by the committee. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
can I
say one more thing? I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank the council also for the time and effort that they put into this. I know it's been quite a long time, but I think we've got a good product, and I really appreciate your willingness to participate in the lengthy process and help us get to where we came out with.
No problem.
Thank you.
I just want to thank everybody else who participated, and I would be remiss if I didn't thank the general counsel and Phil for all the hard work that they put in. We've done a lot of talking and emailing and things of that nature, and I appreciate everybody's willingness to work together cooperatively, and hopefully some other people in legislative bodies will take note of how you should work together on these matters and move forward. So with that in mind, is there anything else to come before the committee? Okay. It's only 5 o'clock. If you'd like to stay a little longer, I'd be happy to stay with you. We're adjourned.